As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Last night, Aston Villa stumbled in pursuit of securing a top four place in the Premier League.
It's Foden. Oh, a hat-trick. And Chambers might have presented him the chance to get it. Stunning! A hat-trick for Phil Foden.
But as Newcastle have shown this season, despite the money that it brings, qualifying for Europe puts a huge strain on smaller squads, especially when financial rules make it harder to spend.
It's not a Willy Wonka golden ticket, you know? It just gets you a year in Champions League. But if you don't build on that, if you don't grow from that, it's meaningless.
So is Tottenham boss Ange Postecoglou right? Is the Champions League worth it if you can't compete? I'm Ayoa Kimwelere. Welcome to the Athletic FC podcast. Here for this one, we have our Aston Villa writer, Jacob Tanswell, Tottenham Hotspur writer, Jack Pitbrook, as well as our Newcastle United writer, Chris Woff. Jacob, let's start with you. Let's talk about last night. And I guess that gulf between Manchester City and Aston Villa, especially when it comes to squad depth, it's not necessarily the lack of players, but I guess it's probably the quality of players that probably made the difference.
I think so. I think if you compare the two games this season between the teams, in December, Aston Villa won. It was their best performance under Unai Emery dead. Most of their players fit. The wear and tear of the season hadn't quite taken hold yet. And then if you take yesterday's performance and you see a really depleted side, a team that made six changes from the win against Wolves, because Emery's looking at that fixture list ahead and thinking, City's kind of a free hit for us. Maybe we can get something out of it, but we've got to really focus on Brentford on Saturday, then Lille coming up. Those were the main thoughts in Emery's mind. And although they played well for large parts of that first half, they just didn't have the depth to go again in the second.
Yeah, for sure. Is there a feeling, though, I know some of the results have been relatively inconsistent of late, that there might be Champions League football at Villa Park next season? I mean, I'm a Brummy, so I'm fascinated for my mates back home.
No, you ask Unai Emery that question every single week at the moment, and he says the same thing. He's very robotic in his replies. He always says, ask me after game 33 or game 34. He's been saying that since December, and we're actually now approaching that stage, so we'll have to talk about it. Villa, what they've done this season is incredible. I know a lot of teams have had injuries, but Villa have got three ACL injuries. They've had reoccurrences. You know, Jacob Ramsey's barely featured us this season. Tyrone Mings is out. Yesterday, you had the spine of the team, essentially. You know, Tyrone Mings, John McGinn, Kamara, Watkins, Martinez. These players are key to Unai Emery's team. And the fact that he can keep grinding out results, even, you know, they're not at their best, and that's why they had to be quite submissive yesterday against Man City. It's a testament to his coaching.
Yeah, Jack, let's talk about Spurs as well. I mean, is there a sense that, you know, fifth spot is going to be enough to get into the Champions League next season? If you look at, you know, these two bonus places that have been put for next season's competition for the Champions League, do Spurs feel like fifth place is going to be enough?
Well, Ange Postecoglou doesn't want to think about it in that way, really. He doesn't want to think of fourth or fifth as being a big achievement. He's very, very focused on the bigger picture and how he can make Spurs competitive at the top end of the table in the long term. That said, objectively, things are looking pretty good. Like, they are looking good for fourth or fifth. Assuming that the Premier League does get one of those bonus Champions League places, then you'd have to say that Spurs is, like, the likelihood of Spurs being in the Champions League next season, I think it is pretty good, although that's not really the message coming from Ange at the moment.
Chris, is it a bit frustrating that we talk about fifth place and not too long ago that felt like a space that Newcastle could have occupied for Champions League football, and the season just sort of seems to have petered off in quite a strange way?
I'm slightly disappointed, Ayo, that you didn't immediately pivot once Jacob mentioned injuries to me, because it feels like I've become the Athletic's injury correspondent over the course of the last 3 months, because Newcastle United's, it's not even an injury crisis, it's been a series of crises and a wider crisis, and that has been the story of Newcastle's season. Up until December, the start of December, they were in a good position in every single competition. They were fifth in the Premier League, and it looked like they were building on last season's mass overachievement in terms of Newcastle being far ahead of schedule, but things have really fallen apart to a certain degree since then, primarily due to injuries in the squad being stretched so far. So I think it is a significant frustration for Newcastle. And if you flip the two seasons, if Newcastle had been where they are this season last year and then were challenging in that top five place this year, you'd say that would have been natural progression. But really, they went, in some ways, the team outperformed the position that the club was in, and they've really found it difficult to get themselves competing on all these different fronts, and they've obviously had extenuating circumstances as well, and unfortunate circumstances with Sandro Tonali's suspension, which is for gambling offences, which is obviously really has exacerbated the issues that they've had. But yeah, Newcastle do look at it as, if we could have just maintained form for a little bit longer, if we could have avoided some of the injuries, which basically have been self-perpetuating and it's become cyclical, then they could have been in that conversation. And that's what they need. That we're going to come onto that, but that's really what Newcastle need to try and establish themselves in the position they want to going forward, the Champions League revenue.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, Europa League, it's not as big in terms of revenue. Still seems that there might be European football at Newcastle next season. What is it, 3 points behind Manchester United, who are currently six at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, Newcastle have become the cliched mid-table side over the course of the last 3 months. They haven't actually won consecutive Premier League matches since the start of December, so they come back after the international break. It had been seen as a reset internally at the club that they would attack these final 10 games of the season. By 10 minutes after half-time, they're 3-1 down to West Ham, and it looks like things have fallen apart. They get that dramatic late victory, and you think they can build on this against an Everton side who haven't won since mid-December, and they take the lead but don't see it through. And that's the position Newcastle are in at the moment. They don't have the resources to bring off the bench. They don't have the depth to really push on to that. So Europe is still within sight, but there's no guarantee on that, because they are just so inconsistent and they are really struggling to find this string of results that would get them into that probably top seven as it might need to be.
Yeah, this brings me nicely really to you, Jacob. If Villa do get that Champions League qualification, which is looking likely, we've seen what's happened with Newcastle in terms of casualties and injuries. Are Villa equipped for that? I know they're playing European football this season at this moment in time in the Conference League, but it's a different level. It's a different kind of game.
Yeah, you're right. I think right now in this moment in time, they're not equipped, but they've got a manager that is a seasoned veteran, really, in terms of managing the workload, managing the Thursday to Sunday schedule. Unai Emery thrives in Europe, and the reason why he's, you know, won as many Europa League titles, although Champions League will be on a different scale, is because he's managing to keep hold of a squad that is down to its bare bones, but he manages just to keep the results progressing. And of course, next year they'll have to strengthen, but that's, I'm sure we'll come on to it. That's where the challenge will be, because they'll have to attract a higher caliber of player. At the same time, their finances have to match that as well. And that's going to be tricky. I think Villa are walking into a situation where they've tried to give Unai Emery everything he wants since he's come up in the last 18 months. They've overspent. They've put a lot of money into the club. Moussa Diaby, Pau Torres, these were marquee signings last year. And they have to go again. Whether they've got the funds for that, whether they've got the scope to do that, it's going to be very difficult this summer.
Yeah, I think qualifying for Champions League consistently is the one, really. And I look at these three clubs and I'm thinking, you know, where they're trying to get to, it would be that constantly qualifying for the Champions League, bringing that revenue in. And Chris, you know, as you can see, it's not easy, is it? Having to rebuild, then you have the depleted squad, and Jack will come to it in a second. And then you've got all these other games and all the competitions in which you need to try and exist in as a club, and trying to balance those books. It's got to be so hard for a team like Newcastle.
It is, and it has been. And I think that for Newcastle as well, there is also this thirst for a major trophy, but they haven't won any trophy of any competition since 1969, which is the Intercity Fairs Cup, which doesn't exist anymore. The last domestic trophy was 1955 in the FA Cup. So the fact that they got to the Carabao Cup final last year and then fell at the final hurdle, they still haven't got that monkey off their back either. So it's like, Eddie Howe, that you had no competition this season, especially given the brutal cup draws Newcastle have had, where he could rest any players. And given the Tonali situation I mentioned earlier, and given that Harvey Barnes, their other big summer signing last season, was injured in a freak injury really in the season, the foot injury, they didn't have actually any strength and depth beyond what they had last season. The other two signings were fullbacks who essentially were seen for the future in Tino Livramento and Lewis Hall. Now, Lewis Hall's barely featured, Livramento we've seen a bit more of, but Newcastle may have to rethink how they actually approached last summer's window as well. Again, because of PSR issues that they had, they couldn't do everything they necessarily wanted to, but really, did they have the strength and depth to be able to cope on so many fronts? In hindsight, I think they're going to have to look back at it and say there were mistakes made, but equally, there is only a certain amount you can do in one or two summers, given the issues that there are with the sort of restrictions you have financially, given the rules in the Premier League.
Jack, what about Spurs then? I mean, since that sort of 2019 final, how do you think Spurs have coped in terms of constantly trying to battle for that Champions League spot?
Well, pretty badly, I'd say. They've only finished in the top four once since reaching the final in 2019. It's obviously when Antonio Conte came in November 2021, and then they came fourth in that season. But then, you know, they were back in the Champions League last season, and they were rubbish. Like, they, you know, Conte got sacked by like 2/3 of the way through the season. So there's no, and this I think is something that Spurs have learned in the last few years, which I think other clubs will probably learn in time. And that's that being in the Champions League in itself, it doesn't solve everything at your club. It doesn't make you a huge club or like an elite club simply by being in the Champions League. Look at Newcastle this year, obviously. Newcastle were in the Champions League at the start of this season, and it hasn't really got them anywhere. It's basically what their campaign was, what, Chris? Just like six games? And then
six games, yeah.
Six games and that's it. And now they're kind of back to square one. And Postecoglou didn't refer to Newcastle specifically, but he was asked about this recently and he said,
right now the most important thing is us, our identity and our football. Because just getting into, I mean, mate, it's not a Willy Wonka golden ticket. You know, it just gets you a year in Champions League. But if you don't build on that, if you don't grow from that, it's meaningless, I think, anyway. Because we're not in it for participation. We're in it to win things. So, yes, Champions League will show that, you know what, if we make Champions League this year, it means we've progressed from last year, yes. But has our football progressed? Are we a better team? Are we a stronger team? Are we going to improve in the summer to make sure that next year we're going to be even better? That's much more important to me. And so my target this year has always been to create a team that I hope will lay strong foundations for moving forward, being a team that can win things. That's where it begins and ends. Logically, as you say, if we've improved and we make Champions Leagues, it means we've had a decent year. But that isn't going to give me any comfort if we're not playing, you know, football that I want us to play and we don't improve in the off-season to make sure we're ready for the next step.
Obviously, being in the Champions League is good and you'd rather be in it than not, but you shouldn't make it the be-all and end-all of your football club, basically.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwunere.
In essence, you know, are we saying that Spurs could be, I guess, a blueprint for teams like Newcastle or Aston Villa then in terms of how you can sort of take on this sort of the big boys of the Premier League or break into that top set of the Premier League?
I think so, because what Spurs have done successfully is they go from being a team who never played in the Champions League to consistently getting in there. You know, they got there under Harry Redknapp for the first time. They then consistently got there under Pochettino. They steadily improved their form in the Champions League, obviously reached all the way up to the final in 2019. Since then, they haven't been able to maintain that level, although I do think they'll probably be back in the tournament next season. So Spurs have shown that there used to be a way to build your way up from being a team outside the Champions League to being a team inside the Champions League. And I'm sure that people at Newcastle and Aston Villa would look at what Spurs did over the last 10 years and think, well, if they can do that, then why can't we do that? Why can't we go from being outside the Champions League to becoming a kind of semi-regular participant in it? I guess the problem is that I think it's probably harder to do that now than it was when Spurs first did it. Like, Spurs first finished in the top four in 2010, and that was just a very different time in the Premier League. Like, there was less money flying around. It felt less stratified. It was probably easier if you had a few good players and you put a good run together to finish in the top four if everything went your way, like Tottenham did under Redknapp. But now I just think the level is so high, plus there's PSR, which obviously makes it harder for teams to bridge that gap. I think it's probably a more difficult job for aspirational teams now to break into the top four than it was when Tottenham first did it in 2010.
I think Jack makes a really good point. The problem Newcastle had, if you go back to the pre-Mike Ashley era and sort of 2007 time when he took over Newcastle, Spurs and Newcastle, in terms of profile of clubs, certainly in terms of commercial revenue, were almost equal. Now, Spurs have gradually built that up over a long period of time and obviously now have their impressive stadium and they're bringing in money in that way. Newcastle stagnated for the entire time that Mike Ashley was there. So the new ownership arrived in October 2021, and revenue streams are just so far below all of those other clubs, and that really does affect the spending you can then make, both in terms of transfer fees, but the big thing which I think gets forgotten about with PSR is wages, and Newcastle's wage structure is still nowhere near any of the so-called Big Six clubs, because it can't be yet. They've had to really hold that back, and that restricts the sort of players you can bring in, and the only way you can sort that out is that you consistently qualify for the Champions League, you bring in revenue there, or you rapidly expand your commercial revenues. Now, Newcastle's commercial revenue went up 2/3 year on year in the last year, and yet Man City's is still 7 times Newcastle's. That's how far behind they are in terms of what they can spend. And when it comes to the stadium, they can't necessarily do what Spurs have done. It's very difficult for Newcastle. They're looking at the moment as to what they can do with St. James's Park, but expansion is difficult. There's listed buildings around it. It's 52,000 at the minute. Ideally, they'd like to get it towards 65,000, but that's going to be costly to A, do, and B, how do you actually do it? The other option is to move stadium. Now, that is a sort of wrench for Newcastle fans, given where it is and what you do. So getting in the Champions League is sort of the one consistent factor. You can bring in more revenue each year, and then that lessens the need for the other factors and allows you to build your commercial revenue in time. But to do that in the short term is very, very difficult, and Newcastle basically max themselves out PSR-wise, couldn't spend in January, and going into this summer, they're going to have to be cute again as to what exactly they do, because although in theory they have the wealthiest owners in the world, this idea that they're the wealthiest club in the world just doesn't work out in reality.
Thinking, Jacob, you know, you spoke about Unai Emery's exceptional record in European football. Could this sort of Conference League journey be almost like a test to see what life could be like next year? Maybe stepping it up if you do get it right with the right players over the summer. But obviously there's still PSR to talk about. But realistically, you know, you've got a manager equipped to take the club to that big stage.
Yeah, Unai Emery, even before the qualifying rounds against Hibernian, he was mentioning that he's seen this as like a precursor to see where Villa are at in terms of managing the Thursday to Sunday schedule. And he's made it clear that he's not here to be playing in the Conference League. He's here to be competing to try and break through that top six, top seven glass ceiling. So will be a really good test. The issue that Villa have is that the whole football side of the operations is built around Unai Emery. So it's not a case of building this club up gradually, building the infrastructure, building the overall culture. It's essentially, let's pin all our hopes on Unai Emery and his football operations. Let him control everything. We'll give him everything he wants. And we hope that he will take us to that next level. So it's not, they have to catch up on the other side of the operations. At the moment, this club's separated into two distinctive areas, the business side of things and the football side of things. The football side of things is regarded as elite because Unai Emery is leading it. But then on the other side, the business side has been relatively the same for the best part of two decades now in terms of the staff there. And they're struggling. You know, Chris alludes to the revenue and the sponsorships and things like that. And Villa are well behind it. That's the reason why they're trying to get off contracts early with Castor, with their front-of-shirt sponsor this season. They're trying to generate bigger revenue. At the moment, if you look at their wage-to-turnover ratio, it's 89%. And there's only three clubs in the Premier League and the Championship that have got a higher one, and that is Leicester, Forest and Everton. And you've seen what's happened to them. So that's a really interesting thing that Villa's business side of things are really mindful of. Emery wants to take this club, and he will take this club to Europa League, Champions League. But there is a worry that the difference between the football side and the business side is so vast that eventually it will come back to bite them.
Yeah, I was just thinking, having grown up with Aston Villa as my local team for a long time, compared to where, I guess, you look at this wonderful, shiny new stadium the Spurs have, do you think Villa are lacking that sort of sexiness, that va-va-voom at this moment in time? I can see where they're building and we can see where Newcastle are building, but maybe Aston Villa still feels like grit and mortar compared to both other teams.
Yeah, Villa Park's great though. It's obviously historic ground, but it's difficult to build. And similar to what Chris was saying, is you know they've had stadium expansion plans for years, redevelopment plans, building the North Stand or demolishing it and building it to a 50,000 seater. But the issue is that there's no room to really build in Aston. And the plans that they had to make Villa more sexy, they were going to add, you know, this box park type Wembley outside Villa Park. It's been put on hold because inflation's taken hold. It's going to cost tens of billions. And right now they're in a rut in terms of how they grow Villa Park and modernise it in a way as well.
Yeah. Jack, as we're talking stadiums, I mean, look, the revenues raised by the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, I mean, Beyonce alone shuts down the entirety of Haringey. I mean, it's quite impressive how we're looking at those revenue streams in comparison to obviously Champions League streams, but there seems to be an interesting model here as how Spurs want to sustain this club moving forward.
You can't over-exaggerate how important Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is to the football club going forward. It opened actually 5 years ago this week. Me and Charlie Eccleshare have done two big articles on The Athletic about one about the opening of the stadium and the second about what it means for the club. And it's just an incredible revenue generator, basically. It's a huge ATM for the club. Like, they make almost £6 million for every home game. They brought out their accounts yesterday, actually. They brought in £549 million in revenue last season, £117 million in matchday revenue, I think second only to Manchester United in the Premier League. And that's not including the kind of off the revenue they have for stuff that isn't football, which is massive. You know, it's the home of NFL in Europe. They had five nights of Beyonce last season where they made millions and millions of pounds. They had AJ's fought there, Tyson Fury's fought there. They've got go-karting there, Saracens play there. Like, it's a huge, huge money-making machine, that stadium. And I think that in the era of PSR, when teams have to stand or fall by their own revenue and can't just go to daddy for a handout all the time, like, it's massive for Tottenham having that, because it means that whatever happens on the pitch, they're always going to be making hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds a year out of that stadium, which is, you know, with money that can go straight into the football team.
Chris, is this something Newcastle are also looking at in terms of, you know, trying to bring people in, that stadium experience, keeping them in, bringing a bit more money in and all that kind of stuff? Because, you know, Europe is not guaranteed, but also you have to think outside the box in many respects.
Yeah, Newcastle have tried to rapidly expand all of these sort of areas, and they are building a sort of fan zone just outside the ground, which is from Seller, which is their front of shirt sponsor, PIF company, who are obviously on Newcastle's ultimate 80% owners as well. So there is that connection, and they are trying to make St. James's Park more of a sort of destination for, and you've got to balance that, because there is a fine balance to make there between, certainly for Newcastle, where they haven't actually expanded the size of the ground yet, and you have so much demand for tickets. for want of a better term, but which sometimes get labelled by, the supporters who've been going a long time, is you get these sort of tourist fans, quote-unquote, which is not me trying to denigrate them at all, but then there is almost that sort of culture clash sometimes. You want these people to come in and spend money because that helps the club, but then you also want those fans who were there before. So these are sort of positive challenges or sort of champagne challenges, as the CEO, Darren Eales, refers to them as at Newcastle. That's sort of what they want. And I realise that part of this podcast, or a large part of this podcast, has come across, certainly from my point of view, from Newcastle point of view, is quite negative. But I just want to go back to sort of the Champions League nights for Newcastle today this season. And obviously, it didn't actually work out how they wanted to. But the night against PSG, their first Champions League occasion at St James's Park in 20 years, when they downed PSG, absolutely thrashed them at St James's, that will live long in the memory for Newcastle, and that was a hurdle they had to overcome again, an emotional sort of one. But they want those nights, they desperately want that going forward, and it's just about trying to realise how you can do that on a consistent basis in a PSR world, and the likes of utilising St James's Park to the strongest possible way you can in the parameters you have at the moment. That's certainly another way of maximising that revenue.
You're listening to the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
He's now scored in each of his last five Premier League games at St James's Park.
One of the big conversations, and Isak, a player that's been in the news of recently in terms of will he stay, won't he, and, you know, trying to stay, you know, within those PSR perimeters. Are Newcastle going to have to sell some of these bigger players, as we're seeing, to try and bring that wage bill down and also seem a bit more appeasing to the PSR?
To tackle Alexander Isak first, I'm actually writing about him today, so that's timely, and that exact situation. And basically, the way that people at Newcastle look at it, and I know this has been spoken about in recruitment meetings over the course of the last year or so, is that if they sell Alexander Isak this summer, they basically may as well all go home and start again, because he is the sort of focal point they want to build the team around. They signed him for £60 million, a club record signing in the summer of 2022. That was a risk, a calculated risk at the time. I mean, so many Premier League clubs have looked at him, and for whatever reason, the very elite clubs had not actually taken the gamble on signing him. Newcastle did, and he's come in, and although he's had some injury problems, his record is phenomenal. He's got 19 goals in all competitions this season. He's scoring at a quicker rate than anyone else in terms of goals per minute in the Premier League, quicker than Erling Haaland and the likes this season. He really is an elite centre forward, and Newcastle recognise that if they sell him, A, they've got to sell on close to Sociedad, so they wouldn't get the full benefit anyway if they sold him. And B, who do you replace him with? The amount that they spent on him last time, that was a gamble in itself. That he has worked out. Whereas if you spend a similar sum of money on a player now, there's no guarantees that they will come in and deliver in the same way. And so that's not the same as being able to necessarily keep him, because if Newcastle don't get into Europe, for example, would Isak want to go? And touching upon the wider squad as it is, they will certainly have to trade better. Newcastle have not traded particularly well over the course of the last few years, even post-takeover, beyond maybe Chris Wood, which was a phenomenal sale read to Nottingham Forest in terms of what they got for him. And so the one you really come to and look at, and although Newcastle don't want to lose him, I think there's more of acceptance it could happen if a big offer comes in, and that's Bruno Guimaraes, and that's this summer. And if Newcastle could sell Bruno Guimaraes for 80-100 million, then that would give them significant PSR room to be able to reinvest. So try to offload Miguel Almiron in January mainly to Saudi Arabia to see if they could bring in some money to then sign a midfielder. They couldn't do that. So there will definitely be player trading. They need to be cute. They don't want to lose their best players, but there's also an acceptance that someone like Bruno Guimaraes, it might be time to sell him and reinvest. But Alexander Isak is not someone they want to let go.
Okay, Jacob, this brings me nicely to Villa because, okay, Champions League happens. Still doesn't mean some players don't want to leave. I don't know how many times Douglas Luiz has been linked with a move away from Aston Villa. I mean, having to balance that as well and the ambition of the club has to be quite tricky.
Yeah, the PSR elephant in the room has been there throughout the season and it's looming now before June 30th, end of the financial year. It's going to be difficult. Obviously, Douglas Luiz is one of Villa's biggest assets. He's got a good contract left. Everyone expected him to leave in 2022 when Arsenal came in, made several offers. Villa even signed Morgan Sanson to replace him. As it turns out, Sanson's now gone. Douglas Luiz is still there. He's one of those players that Villa fear or think they might have to move on just to simply comply with PSR. Similar to Jacob Ramsey, obviously you saw Newcastle were interested in it towards the end of the winter window. Obviously, I'm not sure that'll be the case now, but he's one of those players that would ease PSR concerns because he's pure bookable profit. It'd be around 50 million, and that is essentially what Villa are needing by June 30 to comply with PSR regulations. But you look at the wage bill as well. I mentioned earlier that they've got a really high wage to turnover ratio. They're going to have to sell the likes of Luca Dean, who's Villa's best performer left back this season, instead of Moreno, because he's on £120,000 a week. Moreno's on a lot less than that. They've got to have a look at other high earners as well, but also keep Emery happy. They want to keep Emery happy. And if he's seeing that some of his key players leaving, even if they get a 35 million hit immediately from the Champions League, and that could cause issues. So how will they navigate, how they balance the squad while also being competitive, regardless of what level they are next year, will be the true test for them.
Jack, I'm sat here thinking, you know, the only way for these kind of clubs to kick on is with more investment. And you've written about Daniel Levy seeking more investment for Tottenham Hotspur. Does that feel like the way it's all going now?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Because so much of what's happened in the Premier League in the last 20 plus years has been based on massive external investment, completely unchecked. You know, look at the rise of Chelsea under Roman Abramovich, the rise of City under Abu Dhabi ownership. Like, it's the story of the Premier League is basically the story of people coming in and throwing money at these clubs. In a world which has been built in this way, it's very difficult to come in and succeed without throwing that much money at it. And of course, you know, there are teams who overperform, like Liverpool. You know, Liverpool has spent quite a lot of money, but not as many as other clubs. They've won one Premier League in the Jurgen Klopp era. They might win another one this year. They've come closer a few other times. Teams can massively overperform, like Brentford or Brighton, but they're not going to win the Premier League anytime soon. And these are people, and these are run by incredibly smart people who do everything exactly the right way. So there's no easy, like, there is no easy way. There is no quick fix. It's not really my place to tell clubs how to conduct their business. But I guess all I'd say is teams are going to have to recruit really well, try and be imaginative. And I know it's much harder to be imaginative in the market now than it was 20 years ago, because every market is saturated by scouts. Like, it's like there are no hidden gems really in the market anymore. Going to have to keep appointing the right manager rather than just, you know, a big name manager perhaps, and hope that everything falls into the right place, because there is no, I think particularly in the PSR era, there's no shortcuts anymore. You can't just inject a few hundred million quid and try and cut out a few steps.
Yeah, there's something I want to sort of throw to all three of you, really, in terms of how do you curb that expectation of the fans. Okay, they finally taste European football, and we're talking about businesses, right? Like, so the business is growing much bigger. Season tickets go up a bit more, you know. Does there then mean that every season, or at least fans want to see progress, i.e. Jack, a trophy of some sort to qualify the fact that they're having to turn up, enjoy this wonderful new shiny experience, but they still need to see their club win something?
Trophies is another conversation altogether, because I think my impression, and I'd be interested to hear what the other two think about this, is that as much as fan bases think about trophies, I don't really think that people who run clubs think about trophies that much. I think they think more about how do we consistently perform at the top level? How do we get into the Champions League and stay there? How do we get our revenues consistently high in such a way that we can continue to recruit the best players out there and perform consistently high? But I think the idea of the idea that fans hold on to of what we really want is a big day out at Wembley and we want to see us win a cup. People talk about this in connection with Tottenham. I really don't think it's a Tottenham specific issue. I just don't think that that kind of big Wembley day out winner trophy as the kind of the end goal of any season. I just don't think people who run football clubs think in that way.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And I think part of the problem there is as well is when you're in this sort of, when you've got these elite clubs who have the sort of depth that they have and the ability to compete in so many different competitions, the fear, I think, for a lot of clubs, or the thought process for some sort of mid-table Premier League clubs, is that we could try and have a real go at one of the cups, prioritise it to a degree ahead of the Premier League, then we're probably going to get knocked out by one of these other teams late on in it who usually win these trophies anyway, and then we might finish five places lower in the Premier League, which is worth 10, 15 million to us in terms of revenue. And that's a problem when money comes to be the primary focus of what you need going forward. And I do think there is that issue. For Newcastle, I think it's slightly different in terms of for the here and now. There is a recognition that they simply have to win a trophy at some stage because it is the great yearning of this club. And it's been promised since the start. But the difficulty that Newcastle have the difficulty of balancing that. Eddie Howe has a difficulty of balancing that. Because they didn't win it last season, the Carabao Cup, they go into next season. Really, they need to get back into the Champions League next season and get as close as they can to it. But at the same time, they'll have been two full seasons in the project without actually winning a trophy, and so they got to two quarterfinals this season, but when do they actually get beyond that? And it is sort of the fact that you have to diversify your resources to make sure you get back into the Champions League or as high up in the Premier League, because that's where the money is. The trophies don't generate the money, but the trophies, I'm sure, are what most supporters actually want in that here and now, as well as the Champions League nights, of course.
Aston Villa, they need both, really, because they need trophies to rubber stamp progress and to keep Emery happy, to make sure that he sees, you know, concrete evidence of an upward trajectory. But at the same time, those off the field who are in charge now are worrying about revenue growth, PSR. They have little experience in terms of working in the Premier League. They come from that, you know, legacy fan type of viewpoint, where right now everything that is being talked about centers around financial revenue growth. And yeah, and probably you're right, Jack. I would imagine that the Americans that run Aston Villa are worried about getting into the top four consistently, more so than going to winning an FA Cup or a Carabao Cup. But at the same time, they need to show and prove to Emery that this club is still competing, they're still strong on the pitch, and a trophy would rubber stamp progress.
Jacob, you look at players like Kevin De Bruyne, Haaland, John Stones warming up last night, and you ask yourself, how do Aston Villa as a team get into a position where they have that depth of squad, considering the financial implications at play here? Does it feel unachievable for you?
Yeah, I think it might well be, but it has to be incremental, doesn't it? But at the same time, in order to get a bigger squad, in order to grow your squad depth, you've got to retain your core players as well. Otherwise, you're going to be forever just replacing your key players. So Chris mentioned Bruno Guimarães. You know, in order to build a squad, you need to keep these players whilst adding to it. And probably the only way you can do it is by generating bigger revenue, becoming a bigger club overall, and then eventually, later down the line, having those evenings where you're competing against Man City away and you've got that squad depth. What I would say is that Villa have got a good 14 to 15 players when everyone's fit. But at the moment, the issue is that they're not, and you're really seeing the frailties and the lack of depth beyond that 14, 15 players.
Chris, a generation of Newcastle fans have waited for those away trips to Paris, Milan, Dortmund. Was it all worth it?
I think it is worth it. I think that this season has proven to be more difficult and probably been more fraught since the depths of winter, really, than anyone would have liked. But when the draw was made for the Champions League, Newcastle were in the quote-unquote group of death. They had Paris Saint-Germain, AC Milan, Borussia Dortmund, and that was daunting. And they could have had a far easier group, like Man United, although Man United didn't get through that group as well. And maybe they would have still been in the Champions League after Christmas. But at the same time, Newcastle were fighting these European heavyweights again, these stellar nights in the Champions League. That's what they wanted. And going forward, they need to sort of almost get beyond that, and they need to make that more of a consistent part of who they are and what they are. But it had been such a long period for them to get back there that I think that to have this season, to the growth that has been post-takeover, I don't think that most Newcastle fans, and I don't want to speak for all of them, but I imagine most Newcastle fans would not have changed that. That yes, they don't want to be languishing where they are in the Premier League and really struggling to even name a full squad for Fulham on Saturday. But going forward, the hope is that they will be stronger beyond that. And you have to have these challenges to get better. Newcastle need to have more consistent European football before Champions League football to get used to the grind of playing more than once in a week. Eddie Howe needs that, the squad need that, and the fans also need that. It needs to be a realisation that it won't just be a linear sort of growth. There will be ups and downs along the way, but the first half of the season for Newcastle was phenomenal in so many ways. That Paris Saint-Germain night, I don't think any fan would really want to change that.
Gents, thanks so much for your time. You can catch Jack on our Spurs View from the Lane podcast, as well as Chris on Pod on the Tyne as well. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Adam and the crew are back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Athletic FC podcast. The producers were Guy Clark, Mike Stavrou and Jay Beale. The executive producer was Amy Moorhead. To listen to other great Athletic podcasts for free, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places. The Athletic FC podcast is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.